On a recent Focus on the Family broadcast, psychologist and author Dr. Ken Wilgus shared a parenting strategy called progressive emancipation, which helps build responsibility and independence in teenagers long before they leave home. Now, Dr. Ken says teens are not big children, they're young adults, and they should be treated as such. After the presentation by Dr. Wilgus at Christ Church of the Valley in Phoenix, Arizona, Pastor Dustin Tappan from that church emceed a time of question and answer with the audience on some very sensitive topics. Let's go ahead and listen to that right now.
All right. This was on my mind, and it's going to sound like an attack.
Attack away.
Okay. It's not.
Okay.
What makes you so sure this works? Other than, like, you know, your own children.
Yeah.
Well, give me, like, this. I think this works because...
Well, let's be clear. That's a good point. This is not a magic bullet that everything clears up. It is a path, however, that if you're following it, all the other stuff goes down significantly. It doesn't add extra stuff. And it especially, you can know that you're following the right path. Because parents are always like, I don't know what I'm doing. Now you know what you're doing. And if you are giving that over in points, you know you're following. So to that degree, works means that it helps the whole situation. It doesn't fix everything. But how do I know? I mean, I've been doing this for a long time. You can look at the reviews of the book for many, and you know, I don't want to overstate it, but for many, many families, it's a game changer. It flips the whole knot over where we can now untangle it. And so knowing that part about the need for freedom and giving over autonomy I've been doing this for 25 years. It makes a big difference.
All right, so what do you do if you find out your kids are sexually active?
Well, that depends on you. So, you know, not all of us in here are Christians, and you may have a different standard. Just in case you don't know, the Christian standard is that you seek to remain pure and not sexually active until you're married. And just so you'll know, that's still a thing. The church still teaches that. Because I got a lot of teenagers that are, you know, leading the worship team at his high school youth band, and he's telling me about, you know, having sex with his girlfriend. And I'm like, wait, I thought you were a Christian. He's like, I am a Christian. Well, you know, fornication is still there. It's still in the list. It's almost like, oh, well, I didn't even know that. Yeah, it's still there. That's the goal. But it's also true that it's a very difficult goal, especially when you consider that lusting in your heart is sin as well. So it's important to first, if it's against your own goal for them, it's critical that you let them know that you cannot make sure this doesn't happen. That's not your goal. Even with sexual activity, you cannot be a policeman. But you can let them know that we're going to do some things to try to help you not be as familiar. We're not sure you can go over to his house anymore. We're going to need you to come here. He can come over, but we're not comfortable with that. You know, you can't make it. I understand that. But I can only try to help you not to have so much opportunity. And then, like everything else, it's most important, since I can't control it, honey, can we talk about this? I had one couple that, you know, they were stunned to find out their 15-year-old daughter was active. And the first conversation they had with her was, she was like, I'm sorry, I know you guys are all upset, but she was wanting the pill, she was active. And they said, no, we just didn't realize your faith. We thought you were a Christian. And you hope that stuns them a little bit, like, wait a minute, what? And start to work with them on that. But you don't even make a control battle out of that. By the way, the answer to your kid asking, did you have sex before marriage? Here's your answer, write this down. If I thought it would help you to know what I did before I was married, I would tell you. But I don't think it will help you to know. Just know this, I'm coming at this not because I did it all perfectly myself. Got it? Because here's the thing, those of you that were pure when you got into marriage, you're the ones that'll go, no, I never did, and you make the rest of us look bad. Let's all do the same answer, okay? So that it doesn't become the, oh, that means they did stuff because so-and-so's mom said she never did. So just stick with that. And remember Jesus' words, if you lust after someone in your heart, it is not as simple as being pure. You never were pure before that in your thoughts. It's grace and salvation, not righteousness that we count on. Amen? Amen. Thank you. So, but that's your answer. If I thought it would help you, not, oh, I never did. Don't do that. It wrecks it for everybody else.
All right. Talk about pornography and help us with kind of a non-intrusive conversation with our kids about pornography and their involvement and even the standards that we expect and how we dialogue about that.
You know, it's really weird. You know, I'm 62, and you know, when you answered, I think my kid has seen pornography, it took planning and coordination to see pornography when I was a kid. It took going to that uncle's house of mine that was a vet, and you know, back in his bathroom. You just couldn't. Now they have set up a complete porn stand in your living room. It is available. The same click that gets what is called softcore can get incredibly frightening or intense images. So, number one, it's ubiquitous. It's out there, and it's not something that you hope doesn't touch your family. It's worth being prepared for anyway. And by the way, I'll also add this. I get tired of talking about this as if we're talking about something out there. Many men, if not most of the men in this room, including me, have had their own struggles with porn at different times. It's not a thing over there. It's a tough thing. And you need to be prepared to answer and deal with that temptation. So the easiest thing is that you don't filter teenagers' devices. It's humiliating to have to ask your mom for the code to finish your report on breast cancer. Instead, you have, I recommend, monitoring software that's, and you say that, like, listen, I'm putting this on all the devices, and if you're a dad, you can say, and I'm doing it for me as well. I just don't want to have that thought in my mind. I have it. And that way, it's not a surprise, but you tell them it's not going to filter anything, but we will get a report of everywhere that this computer and your phone went. And that way they'll know that they're being held accountable for that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then lastly, it's really important that most of the time with pornography, you hope that you're dealing with a teenager that is understands and is striving not to do that. It's critical to emphasize not so much just how bad it is for them, but how it is artificial. We believe in marriage, we believe in genuine love, and it is demeaning to women. It worries me that's not talked about enough anymore. It's now become, we're sex positive in feminism, which is ridiculous. It's demeaning of women. And most of pornography includes things that you'd have to pay a woman to do. That's not real life. I have to tell boys that all the time. That is not real. No woman does that. But you hope you have a teenager that agrees and is striving to stay away from it. And then it is rarely helpful to punish a bunch. It's much more important to have conversations about. When you first find out that there's porn, do not flip out and do not emphasize that you have sullied our family. It's not your rule. It is a rule that's good for them, and it doesn't help for you to add to the shame. So I don't even think first time it's worth even having a consequence for. It is the beginning of a series of conversations, especially dads, if you can. And you really need to practice this with your wife. Practice, you know, saying the word masturbation. Say it too so you can check with each other. So you're talking about it and you can talk out loud with your kid. And when you come to him and go, so, dude, we, you know, the whole thing last week, how's that going? Pornography. Fine, Dad. I don't know. Whatever. Okay. I'm just saying because I know that's kind of a struggle I want to talk to. And then you leave. You've signaled that I can talk about this. And then you wait a couple of weeks. Hey, dude, how's it going on the pornography thing? Fine, Dad. Why do you keep asking? I just want you to, that's still succeeding in signaling that I want us to talk about this and I can talk about it. And you have a series of conversations. In some cases, when there's repeated over and over and it does not seem like he or she is striving, because also girls struggle some, it's far less percentage, but it's still there. If there's a continual use and maybe seemingly not much attempt to stay away from it, then you can reluctantly say, you know, we're going to have to limit your internet use. You do your homework out here at the kitchen table. But I would hold off on that until you really have to. Try not to get there.
Yeah, is the reason why that's the case because if we go hard with consequences and we're so tough on them in the beginning, we lose our ability to be influential with them down the road.
Yeah.
Is that the
And it really
logic?
Kicks up shame a lot, and it makes it much harder down the line to be effective. Yeah, exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about mental health. What are some signs you know of that our teens are facing mental health issues that would need attention?
Yeah, I think the first thing is that, as you know, adolescence is stressful. And the two big categories of mental health issues is depression and anxiety. So the first thing to know is that, as you probably know, it's not a stunner when you can see that your teenager is moderately depressed. I am quite certain in seventh grade I was moderately depressed the whole year. I was 4 foot nothing. It was filled with a school of eighth graders that I swear were 35 and drove up in their car and were like putting the cigarette out. I was just like, I would get into the locker, just close it. It was not a good year for me. But there's levels of struggle that you want to encourage and so forth, but you really want to draw the line at when they're not functioning. So if this keeps your kid from doing, like going to school, being a part of activities, the sports or whatever they've been doing, refusing or pulling away from social interaction, that's when you really do need to think about intervening, and including seeking a counselor to get at least an evaluation. But prior to that, I don't know that you need to. Certainly, it's hard to get teenagers to go to therapists. It's getting easier, but it's harder for them to want to go. It always carries the implication that you think I'm nuts. So you'll give the speech of, I would love to have someone to share with. Isn't this great? No, it's not great. I don't want to do it. That kind of use of therapy doesn't really happen until you're about 23, when your brain development is very different. They're just trying to get through. So it's actually easier to tell your teenager, no, we made an appointment because you missed 4 days of school out of the last seven. And so you have to go, we're going to find out. And that's actually easier for them to understand. So in that category, then, there's two basic categories, and think about it this way. Depression is not sadness, although sometimes there are tears. When teenagers come to my office and they're like, I'll say, so your mom says you're depressed. Do you think you're depressed? No. I'm like, well, let me ask you this. Do you ever feel tired anger? Like flat, like, man, if I had the energy, I would be ticked, but pfft. And they're like, yeah, I feel that a lot. Yeah, okay, how about this? Do you ever feel bored? Not this kind of bored, but like, let's go, let's do something. Yeah, okay, that's called agitation. That's depression. So essentially, in a sort of simplified version, depression is actually when you're using all your psychological energy to keep it together. And so everything's more flat. It's not so much emotion, except for anger, that will come out when you lose control of it, but everything stays really in a narrow range. Now with teenagers, they're not going to be in bed and not doing it. They can get energetic even though they're depressed. Sometimes, for example, you'll say, well, they were with their friends and laughing. How could you possibly be depressed? There's a difference between a kind of silliness and joy. I had this one girl that came to my office one day, she goes, I'm having a good day, okay? And I'm like, well, great. I don't want to talk about my dad today, okay? And I'm like, okay, that's not joy. That's not a good, that's a kind of a, I don't want to go there. So teenagers can show kind of silliness, but it's still within the level of depression. Anxiety is different. It's not fear. It's not that they're thinking wrong things and then they get kind of lit up with adrenaline. Anxiety is organic. It's just there. And most of the time, at least one of the parents have anxiety as well. And in those cases, it does not help to say, honey, it's okay. Everyone likes you at school. That's not what it is. It's an anxiety thing. And you have to kind of, if you have a severely anxious kid, need to take it seriously and let them know that, listen, I know the anxiety's tough, but you're going to have to, like yesterday, a parent asked me, I think their teenager doesn't want to go to youth. She wants to sit in church with them. And the dad was like, we're going to just throw her into youth. And that's what dads do. Throw them in the deep end. They'll learn to. Well, so I suggested that what you can do is, we know it's tough, but we're going to start. You have to pick 2 Sundays a month that you can sit with us, but you have to go to the group the other time and then back that up. So you basically leave it more and more to them to learn to handle the anxiety. But those are the two big categories. But if they're functioning and doing what they need to do, then you don't have to rush them off to a therapist all the time.
Yeah, give us a length of time before we need to take action?
So most of the time, diagnostically, it's going to be about 6 weeks of your depression or whatever to kind of establish that. However, I think it varies with the severity of the lack of function. So if your kid is seemingly still going to school, still doing the activities, but not really going out with her friends as much, then, you know, and you're seeing other things, then you might wait. But if your kid all of a sudden isn't going to school, and quit their job and whatever, then you don't have to wait the whole time. You can go quicker than that, but 3 to 6 weeks probably.
What do we do if we discover our kids are either self-harming or cutting or considering and processing suicide?
Okay, so the first thing you need to know is that cutting, self-harm, is not directly related to suicide. It doesn't go from cutting and then you kill yourself. They're actually kind of unrelated. So the sort of good news, bad news is when you find marks on her arm, that does not mean that you need to call a hospital for her to be locked up or whatever. It does mean that it's a tougher thing to deal with because there's different levels of cutting. The rare is the ones that you don't even see. He or she, often it's a she, doing it on her hip or somewhere where you can't see it. It's almost a little ritual thing. That's rare. More commonly, you'll see your kid who had a friend that they heard about that's doing it, and you'll find out because they're not really trying to cover it, and you're stuck with trying to deal with, what are you doing? It's important in that example that you not make a control battle out of it, but you definitely need to talk to them about it. They will not be able to answer why are you doing that, because you kind of don't know why you're doing it. But most of the time, very often, that will be something that they can go through shortly, but they will stop. And if that happens, that's fine. But if it doesn't, I think continued cutting would be definitely a sign of you need to talk to a therapist. Suicide statements are a different thing altogether. Everything needs to stop. And a lot of times it'll happen right in the middle of an argument. You're the worst parents ever. I'm just going to kill myself. And you think, oh, they're just, you don't want to take that risk. Everything stops. What did you just say? Oh, yeah, I'm going to kill myself. I need to know, are you telling me that you're at risk of harming yourself? Because if so, we may be taking a trip to a psych hospital tonight or any hospital emergency room. And virtually always, okay, all right, no, I'm not going to kill myself. I'm just saying that you're the worst parent ever. And then you're good. Are you sure? That's fine. But if you have a kid that is continually giving you signals, like the answer, why do you care? I'm not even going to be here in a week. That's not a good enough answer. And a teenager that tells you, I'm not going to go anywhere. Just, you cannot tell me that you may kill yourself and me just hope that, well, there's a decent chance you'll live till tomorrow. You're too important to me, and we will go and talk to somebody about that today. That will not happen to most of you. But if you have that kind of statement, teenagers need to know, essentially, that you tell me that your life is the worst, that you feel like you can't go on, fine. But if you tell me that you're going to hurt yourself, you're going to kill yourself, then we're going to stop everything and address that. That also means that whatever the thing that happened that kicked it up, if you don't let me see my boyfriend, I will. If I'm still grounded, you do not want to get into the habit of, okay, we'll back off so you won't kill yourself. A suicide does not work like that. You cannot spend your life back. I've had parents backing off of all kinds of consequences that should happen just for this remote concern about what if I cause them to kill yourself. You cannot cause that by adding stress. It's a completely different thing. So you continue on with what you're doing, but you address any kind of threat about suicide directly, that you can't tell me that or we're going to respond to it. And virtually all your kids will just learn a new way to tell you that their life sucks, but they won't necessarily, you know, do that.
Parenting teens can be a joy, but it is a struggle at times, and we so appreciate the wisdom offered by Dr. Ken Wilgus. You'll find more insights in his book called Feeding the Mouth That Bites You, A Complete Guide to Parenting Adolescents and Launching Them into the World. Get a copy from us here at Focus on the Family, where proceeds go right back into ministry. Just visit focusonthefamily.com/store.